Hey guys, my name is Mavi and I've spent the last 14 years in the plastic surgery and beauty industry, working alongside top board certified plastic surgeons. In that time, I've helped thousands of women in their surgical journey. My passion to educate and help women feel empowered is what led to what we now know as the Big Butts No Lies podcast. Join in on the fun as I talk to plastic surgery experts, friends, and real life patients about all things plastic surgery. Should be fun. Hey guys, do I have the episode for you today? I'm not alone. I'm joined with Annalisa.
Hello.
And my favorite plastic surgeon, Dr. Fustak, Dr. Abdel Fustak.
Thank you for interviewing me and letting me address your audience.
I'm very excited. You guys have heard me talk about him in previous episodes where I talk about riding in a car with him to a conference that we were going to give and how we were riding in the car and he got cut off. And I was maybe early 20s. And this memory has stuck with me this whole time because you told me, I wonder what is happening for them to feel that they have to cut off. Maybe they're on their way to an emergency. Maybe they just got a very sad phone call. And it made me stop and think. At that time, I hadn't thought about things like that before. And it really took me like, oh, that's true. And I've carried that with me since then. Now I'm like, I wonder what's going on in their life. I wonder what maybe they have an emergency when I get cut off on the road and I try not to get mad. And I remember that from you. So
patience.
Patience. I've told my listeners about you before bringing you on. I've already talked about you.
Yes, she has.
You have to understand that anything that happens to us has no meaning other than the meaning we give it. And then the meaning becomes the event.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a process. And most people don't have the time to actually process what they're thinking about and what their action or reaction to whatever happened. But if you train yourself to make a space, and it takes time and it takes a lot of effort and a lot of repetition to make a space between what happens and your response to it. If that space is wide enough, then you have plenty of time to really think and give it meaning.
And that's beautifully said.
It becomes the event.
See, and this is why I carry these conversations with me. So Dr. Fustak, I've talked about it on the show before how I have learned so much from you, from sitting in your consultations. And one of the things that I have really loved was the time that you would take with your patients to explain more than the procedure, more than this is what a tummy tuck is, more than, you know, this is a breast augmentation, this is what we're going to do. But I have always, you know, remembered that you would sit and talk to our patients who were maybe overweight or maybe underweight or, you know, not healthy. Maybe they were dealing with diabetes and cholesterol and all of these other things. And I've always felt like you would sit there and talk to them for as long as you needed to, until even if it wasn't about a tummy tuck or a breast augmentation, even though it was about something completely different, you took the time to really make an impact in people's lives when they were here having a consultation with you for a cosmetic procedure. To this day, like, I love that. It's something that I ask my listeners when they are looking for a plastic surgeon to look for a surgeon who's not in a rush, who's not, you know, just wham, bam, here you go, bye. But somebody who actually cares and is more than just, it's more than just surgery. It's, you know, a whole.
You have the empathy.
Let me explain the depth of that. We're sitting, the three of us right now, mm-hmm. here, and we're breathing. And you have to understand, what are we doing when we breathe? If you take a deep breath, you actually take in, listen to this, you're taking in 10 to the power of 22 atoms of oxygen, of hydrogen, of nitrogen, of water, or whatever is in the air around us. 10 to the power of 22 atoms that were part of your atoms, part of her atoms, and we're exchanging as we're sitting here right now, physically, we're exchanging body parts.
Wow.
So I am sitting with a patient.
This is great.
And I am trying to help that patient. So I bring her down to the level of physical being, because we really don't think we are just one human race. And the only place we have is the spaceship Earth. And we're killing it right now. So we're connected beyond what you think. We're really widely connected. I mean, I don't want to go to the theories. There is a guy, and this is important, who discovered in 1962 or 63, his name J.S. Bell. He's a physicist. And one day he made a discovery. Didn't think much of it. He couldn't at the time have the electronic devices to verify his discovery. But he wrote a small booklet. He said, if you want to prove me wrong, this is what you need to do. A few years later in Paris, France, Alan Aspect, he had the tools. And he said, J.S. Bell is not, this could be right. This couldn't be right. And I want to prove he was wrong. So he went and got the equipment, set together, went step by step by step. The discovery was right. He said, I may have made a mistake somewhere along the way. So he did it again and again and again until he said, it is a correct physical theory or theorem. Then in 1972, at the University of California at Berkeley, the Department of Defense, our Department of Defense, funded an experiment to see if this J.S. Bell discovery is correct. And again, the same process. The person that they brought to find out that this is wrong, he tried several times, then he said, this is a correct. So the Department of Defense, and I'm going to say it correctly, made a statement that the discovery of J.S. Bell is, and I'm quoting, the most fundamental discovery in the history of science to date.
Wow.
That's
what was the discovery?
The discovery was that if you have a paired system particles, now we go to the subatomic, yes, the quantum mechanic. If you have a paired system particle, it has, and they're spinning in opposite direction. One particle is spinning in one direction, the other one is in the opposite direction. If you separate them in time and space, and you could put one particle on the moon and the other particle on Earth, and then with a slight light, beam of light, you change the spin on one particle, the other one will change instantaneously.
Because they connect.
Because they're connected. So his conclusion is, he said, they're in the space, in the universe, there are space but no separateness.
Yes. Wow. It doesn't separate. So, it doesn't matter where you are.
Meaning, yeah, the three of us, I understand from it, that there's three of us now sitting here and talking. We're not just communicating within the three of us. We're communicating with the universe.
Yes.
At the physical level. So when I'm sitting with a patient, I know I'm not just talking to that patient. I'm talking beyond her. And even at the physical level, that person is not in an island. It's not an island.
Correct.
If I change that person, I'm changing a bunch of people that person communicate with.
Yeah.
Wow.
And that's why we say everybody knows 10 people, but those 10 people are who impact you.
So right now, we're exchanging body parts, you and I.
Yes, correct.
At the physical level.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's amazing. This is why I love these conversations. So that's why you feel whenever you have a patient in front of you to take the time, because you know you're making more of an impact than that one person, because that person's going to go and make changes in her life. But also, even if she doesn't make changes in her life, she'll tell somebody, or her kids, or whoever. And it's, out in space, out in the universe.
We educate each other every minute of our existence.
Perfectly said. That's completely true.
You guys, it's very easy for me when I'm talking to Dr. Fustak to get lost in conversation because I am fascinated by everything he talks about. So I have to put my notes together and keep us on track or else this will be a 3.5-4 hour episode. So I wanted to tell my listeners about you're a French trained plastic surgeon. So tell us a little bit about being a plastic surgeon in France and then coming here to America and starting your practice.
Yeah, where you started.
Yeah.
You know, back when I was in France, you were either a surgeon or a non-surgeon, meaning the study of medicine. And when you start training, you either choose non-surgical field or surgical field. Non-surgical, you can become a cardiologist, you can become an internal medicine, a radiologist, etc. Surgery, you're supposed to be able to do surgery. You are a surgeon. So at the time I'm talking about the 60s, there was no specific branch for plastic surgery, but you are a surgeon. So one day you could be doing an abdominoplasty. The next day you could do an appendectomy. The third day you could do a broken leg or a broken arm. That is how I was trained in France. And I did all of this depending on the days and where I'm rotating. If I'm ENT, I'm doing ENT surgery. So it gives you a wider horizon as what surgery is and how you can help people in various fields of the surgery, of the surgery.
So you've seen it all.
Yeah, he's seen a lot.
I got to interrupt, sorry. Yes.
So, but then what I liked plastic surgery more than other things. I said, I don't want to do ENT. I didn't like ENT. Mm-hmm. I didn't like this. I didn't like that. So I focused on being a plastic surgeon. I was going to medical school and there was a student that from India. And there was very, very, very few foreigners in the class. Very, very, almost non-existent. But he stood out in my eyes. He was doing so well. And I was competing. I didn't tell him I was competing with him. But I was competing with him. And he said, then one day I said, what's your secret? How come you do well? And he said, I read American books. Mm. Oh, I said, American books. And the idea of coming to the United States, at the time, anything, there's a new paper, new discovery, new tools, a new technique, new everything, they came from the United States, except when it came to liposuction. The liposuction was being practiced in Europe 10 years, 15 years ahead of the United States of America. And it came to the United States right in June 1982.
It's amazing.
I know.
two plastic surgeons from France came, Dr. Illouz and Dr. Fournier. They came and gave a lecture at the Galleria. Mm-hmm. Okay. And the lecture was, they talked about liposuction. And that's how it started to be. So everything else other than liposuction, the United States was ahead. Mm-hmm. So that's the idea of coming in. I picked up my wife and a 2-year-old kid and came to
America. We're going to America.
And carried on. Yes.
That's how it is.
So when you got here, how was the process for you to be able to do surgery here?
I was nobody at the time. You had to take and go through the training again. I had to go through the training. But before that.
So you had to get certified.
Yeah.
Again.
So wow. I had to learn English. I didn't know any English. See? I'm still learning.
He only spoke French and Arabic.
Yes. So I said to myself, cool. I had no time. I arrived here in March, I think. No. December 11, 1975. And I said to myself, I need to learn English fast because I had an exam in June. So I had from March.
You had a small period.
Hold on, Dr. Fustak. So you landed in December and you had to learn English in time by July?
Yes.
By June. By June and, to take an exam.
Oh my gosh.
And I had 80 hours with three different teachers, single. I had three teachers, one-on-one. And each one would give me 2 hours, 6 hours a day, 15 days. That was it.
That's so inspiring.
Wow.
So the exam came and I went to, it happened at the University of Houston. And I went there and I was not experienced with multiple choice questions. I had no...
No one likes multiple choice questions.
Now I'm sitting and I'm reading those questions and every one of them, for somebody who just learned the English, look, the correct answer. I mean, honest to God, and I said to myself, so I went home afterward and she said, my wife said, how did you do? I said, listen, I think I'm going to flank the medical part, but I think I'll pass the English test. And when this results came up, 6 weeks later, actually, it was the reverse. I passed the medical.
And the opposite, yeah.
So then you had to go through
training.
Residency, right?
Yes. Uh-huh. I had to go back to general surgery, and that was the very tough to find a place. I mean, this is a long story, but I landed at St. Joseph's Hospital.
Mr. Biggs and Dr. Biggs.
So I did my general surgery. Mm-hmm. And then I would qualify for, I think, 2 years before, 3 years before I was qualified. I mean, I need to apply for plastic surgery. And I did. No, I didn't. I mean, I met Dr. Cronin because I rotated through Dr. Cronin at the time. And I said, Dr. Cronin, I'd like to apply for your program. He said, go ahead and call my secretary and she will send you an application and you fill it out and give it to me. I said, oh, he's so kind. So nice. He's just being so nice. I'm going to apply and he's going to turn me down. And I can't take rejection.
No.
Honest to God. That's
no way.
So I kept that application in my at home. Then a few months later, he sees me at night. You know, I'm making my rotation and I'm making seeing the patients. And he said, Fustak, did you send the application? I said, no, sir. He said, why? I said, see how busy I am? I don't have the time to go on. Anyhow, he over maybe a year, he asked me that question so many times. And then I said, I know he's not going to accept me because they had one position for the year I would qualify. The other position was given to an oral surgeon from Louisiana who was accepted in their program 5 years before.
Wow.
Oh my gosh.
So he was going through general surgery with me just to finish so they go into plastic. He was already, so I have one position. And I said, there is no way in the world they're going to take me. But I did turn in the application. He picked it up from me. And
The rest is history.
That's amazing. It was in the cards for you, Dr. Fustak.
Yeah.
So training, you have to go through full residency.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Which?
General surgery and then plastic surgery.
What is it like 4 years? Or
5 years of general surgery.
And 2 years of plastic surgery.
Wow. So this is for our listeners to know. A lot of the foreign trained plastic surgeons that y'all are seeing doing surgery in Florida as surgical assistants, they're not supposed to be doing that. They're supposed to come go through our formal training, get privileges, and to do those types of surgeries. So I wanted y'all to know that because I already knew, and I knew because of Dr. Fustak.
Versus the cosmetic surgeon.
Don't even get me started.
Okay, sorry.
Okay. So I really wanted to get that. That to me is very important that you had your practice in France and you were like, you know what? I'm going to go do this in America.
So you had double training, technically.
Double training.
Technically. Yeah,
double training. So Dr. Fustak, now let's get into what the episode, that why I picked you for this episode. And why I picked you for this episode was because through you, I learned how important the connection of nutrition, mind, and body was for our overall health. And I see a lot of my girls who they don't really understand, or maybe they do understand, but they haven't gotten the chance to sit in a room and listen to you talk about.
Or
they don't know how to ask. And I think it's something that's very important. And my girls know that I'm on my personal growth journey, and anything that I'm learning, I want to share with y'all. And I have learned so much from sitting in rooms with Dr. Fustock. So I want to talk about the importance of nutrition before, during, and after a surgical procedure.
Nutrition determines to a great extent what you eat, determines to a great extent how long you're going to live, how well you're going to live, and what kind of illnesses you're going to have in your lifetime. That's basically what determines it. See, my dad died from a heart attack. He went to sleep, didn't wake up. His only sibling was his sister. She had high blood pressure, heart condition, and she died from a stroke. In 1984, I had to have, I wanted to buy a good life insurance. And I obviously, it requires an extended physical exam, treadmill, everything. So I did. I passed for, but one of the things that stuck with me was that my diastolic blood pressure was high, was in the 85, 86.
Diastolic is the bottom number of your blood pressure reading. So, you know, usually you'll see like 120 over 80. Your diastolic is the bottom number.
Yes. And that's when the heart is resting. So if you have high diastolic number, it doesn't matter what your systolic number is. That's what determines, define the high blood pressure. So I didn't like it. And I said, at the time, and this is the truth, at the time, I was so busy starting my practice. So I would go through the whole day, come home, eat dinner, and smoke a pipe on my chair and watch any sports activity until 10 o'clock, 10:30, go to bed, wake up in the morning, do the same thing. So I smoked pipe. And then I said, I don't want to die. Like, I don't want to go to sleep and not wake up. So I started looking at, maybe I need to start doing something. So I started walking. And then from walking, over a year period of time, I went from couch potato to walking, to jogging, to running. I was doing 6 miles a day, 7 days a week.
Unbelievable.
And I went to see another cardiologist, a friend of mine, and I said, I need a stress test. Just do a stress test on me. I had lost weight. My heart rate went down. My systolic blood pressure went down. That's the high number. But the lower number was still high in the 80s. What should I do? I mean, here I'm doing 6 miles a day. I said, maybe I start need to look into nutrition. So I start reading books, changing my food, reading books, until I have all those books. And until I almost read 200 books on nutrition. And one day I became completely a vegan. 3 months after being a vegan, I went to the same cardiologist and did a stress test. The diastolic blood pressure went from 86, 87 to 64, 65, 67.
Wow.
So now suddenly I was like, my God, nice. What is the importance of nutrition? That was the opening of the door for me. This is a huge opening. Suddenly I said, oh my God, all this workout, all those miles I'm running, I'm doing things.
Stress.
And yet it wasn't enough. So workout, exercise is a must, but it's not enough unless you change your eating habits.
It goes hand in hand.
It's like those particles that are...
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
It goes hand in hand.
Like those... paired particle system. Yeah.
Yes.
The physical and
good
the,
one, Mavi. High five on that one.
Yeah.
So once you started to change your diet, you saw the biggest change in
benefits.
I'm still doing it.
Uh-huh. Well, yeah.
Because, are you vegan now?
The knowledge evolved since then. I mean, the last 7 years, it opened up like a new horizon in nutrition. Suddenly we know now. You see, you're born, each one of us is born with between 80 and 100 billion neurons. In our head, okay? To think with, between 80 to 100 billions. By the age of 21, your prefrontal lobe becomes fully developed.
Mm-hmm.
That prefrontal lobe that helps you with
decisions.
Multitasking,
uh-huh.
making decision, evaluating things, the pros and cons of it. That's when you really have it. So after that, every 10 years, you lose 10% of your mental capacity. Unless you keep learning. If you start by the age of 40, you've probably lost about, I would say, 30% of your mental agility. And then if you have high blood pressure, by that, most people do, by the 60, everybody's taking some medication, high blood pressure, cholesterol high, heart disease, any condition, and even cancer. So unless you do something, 7 or 8 years ago, in 2007, there was a discovery that you could put mice through a program of fasting and changing their diet, and suddenly they grow new neurons in the hypothalamus and hippocampus.
Yes.
That's the site of learning and memory.
Wow.
So now we know we can create new neurons through our activity and nutrition.
Wow.
And that is huge. That's a huge meaning.
Why aren't we screaming this at the top of our lungs? Like, why doesn't everybody know this?
So since then, a new chapter of nutrition was open.
Mm-hmm. Since 2007.
Yeah. From 2007 till now. And right now, I've read the last maybe year about 6 new books about nutrition. And I've changed. So I'm changing and changing.
You keep up with the time.
Yeah, keep up with the time.
This is just a question. What does a normal day of eating for you look like? Like, what would you have for breakfast? What would you have for lunch?
That's a good question.
Because I don't know.
Yeah.
What am I supposed to be eating?
You have to know thyself. You know, you have to know yourself. And
good
that's
point.
Very, very, very critical, because no two of us are alike. I know if I eat breakfast, I will be hungry all day long.
Okay? Oh.
So I don't
metabolism starts going.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't eat breakfast. I don't eat lunch. I drink throughout the day, but I have one meal at night. Our meal at night now
mm-hmm.
is a vegetable soup, whatever it is. Okay. And not all vegetables, because now we're dealing with lectins, and this is a different topic. So vegetable soup, salad, and mm-hmm. then whatever other vegetables. Asparagus, cauliflowers, artichokes, and
I'm coming over. That is my diet right there.
So and I introduced nuts, not peanuts, not cashew, real nuts like hazelnut, pistachios, walnuts, macadamia nuts. I have those
mm-hmm.
at home. I just grab a few.
Grab and go.
The other day when I was here, I was eavesdropping. I heard a conversation about something in broccoli and cauliflower. What was that?
The mushrooms has two major antioxidant, anti-inflammatory. They only in mushroom there you have those two. Ergothionein. Okay, that's one of them. We call it ergot as a. And the other one is glutathione. Glutathione is a major anti-inflammatory because of our nutrition, we have chronic inflammation. And the chronic inflammation is the mother of all the non-communicable diseases, anything other than inherited condition, genetically inherited condition.
So mushrooms.
Mushroom, cauliflowers is great. I mean, these, what's called the cruciform vegetables.
Mm, there we go. So, okay, on another, making sure I cover all the things that I have to talk about was nutrition, but before surgery, during surgery, and after surgery can impact whether a patient has wound breakdown, correct?
Correct.
So ideally, what should a patient be doing to prepare for surgery nutrition? Wise.
Before the surgery, we have to have a lab test to test where their deficiencies are and what vitamins.
I mean, should be doing anyways.
I mean,
right?
Should be doing, yeah.
Yes.
And because once you do that, and If I see somebody coming in my office overweight, I know they have insulin resistance. I know that without, before even I examined them. I know they have a weight problem. Weight problem meaning insulin resistance. Why insulin resistance? That's another topic we have.
I know that alone is a whole hour.
Exactly.
So checking their labs to see where their deficiency is. For our listeners, who would they go to get those types of labs? Like a primary care before they even start the plastic surgery journey? Have their plastic surgeon order it for them? Or I know this is what you're going to be offering soon. Consultations for nutrition for that's your patients.
Awesome. Yeah, that's correct. So awesome.
I'm leaking that. I'm
sorry,
leaking you. That's to come. So
I'm speaking as a patient. awesome.
First, we got a routine blood test, and then if I have suspicion that they have high number of inflammatory markers in their blood, I need to know that, and those are not ordered routinely. Right now, you start hearing really about chronic inflammation everywhere. But before, a year ago, it wasn't really in vogue. Nobody knew what's chronic inflammation. So we order those in order for them to see, because unless they see it on a lab work. Black and white. It's hard to get the effect on them.
And some patients are healthy. They've never had any workup. They don't know what they don't know.
Yeah. And when I asked them, so I eat healthy. I said, okay, you eat healthy. Tell me what you had for dinner.
Mm-hmm.
And I immediately said, this is not healthy. This is But they say, or they say, you know, I eat a little bit from everything in moderation. What do you mean in moderation? Poison in moderation is still poison.
Right.
Yeah.
My moderation or your moderation, right?
So that's really what I was. And then I said, I will only do the surgery if you promise me you're going to have a whole social change in your relationship, in your eating, in your. Because I don't want to do surgery for you. You enjoy it for a couple of months, 3 months, 4 months, and then suddenly you go back to whatever produced your condition. So if I see that, and you know, between the visit and the surgery, there are times that show me how you're going to do that. And they do.
And that's where the ethical doctors come
exactly
in.
And that is something that is really important 100%. Because you're taking the time to monitor that.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Are they going to make the lifestyle changes? Because like I've told you guys before, if just because you have liposuction or a tummy tuck or whatever, you can still gain weight, and you're going to gain it wherever. If you don't gain it in your stomach, you'll gain it somewhere else, and you'll sometimes gain it around the insides, where you can't liposuction it out. You can't.
Yeah.
And that
under the muscle, yes.
That is the active fat.
Mm-hmm.
Active fat is a almost snow color fat around the guts. And that is an active fat because it does give you high blood pressure, high cholesterol, fatty liver. It gives you all of the conditions, pre-diabetes, diabetes. That is the fat that nobody can remove other than the person doing the right things.
Right. And that fat, that intra-abdominal fat, is what sometimes you ladies see when you're standing sideways or in front of the mirror and you still feel like wide, or you still feel a little big, but you can't pinch anything. That fat.
It's like the beer gut.
Yeah. It's like a beer gut kind
of. Yeah. I tell them it's you're pregnant, but not with a baby. And my baby comes out after 9 months. That pregnancy is not going to go away
unless you change your eating.
Exactly.
Yeah.
See, and I love that you monitor them long enough. And I feel like if the patient wants it enough, they'll make the changes.
Mm-hmm.
But if they don't, then they don't. But you won't do their surgery.
But it's good for the consultation, for the education.
That's true. We still need the educational consultation.
Patients have no clue.
And that's why I feel, you know, episodes like this about nutrition, about something that I have in my notes that we're already 40 minutes in, which I already knew.
No, keep going. So keep going. This is good.
One of the most important things that I learned from you when I worked with you was about meditation. And I know you were going through your personal growth journey at that time. And I love this because I learned from what you were experiencing. And I think it's something really important that I want our listeners to hear, you know, about this experience and when it was the aha moment for you of the connection between mind and body.
I'm on a quest personally. I'm on a journey, like all of us. My journey is dealing with myself. What can I do to make the best out of what the Lord God gave me? The gift of life. So to me, it's a huge gift. And if somebody gave you a great gift that has no price, it's a priceless gift, you want to take good care of it. You don't want to neglect that gift. To show your appreciation. I mean, my God, God gave me life, gave me this miraculous body. Everything is, imagine I give you a gift and you just throw it in the trash. So I need to acknowledge the gift and appreciate that gift and take care of that gift. So what can I do to show my appreciation for the gift of life and the gift of this physical and mental and spiritual body is to take good care of it. But unless I go through a research and find out what's best. So one of them is meditation. Meditation is, you have to understand your mind. Your mind is like a broken record. And it tries to be a rebellious mind, meaning it makes you nervous, it makes you unfit, it makes you feel bad about yourself, it gives you all of these, what you're missing, because your mind, most of the time, is dwelling about what you don't have, not what you have. I call that gravity. Gravity meaning it's effortless. You know, I used to take my children out, every one of them alone, and now on a Friday evening, that was the routine. And I would sit and have a conversation with them, even when they were 5, 6, 7. I mean, what do you think of your brother, for example? Oh, he makes my life miserable. He's into everything.
Spoken like a true brother.
And then, so the bad things about her relationship with her brother comes out easily. What is he bad for? Then if you ask, what is it that you like about him? Now, I have to think. I have to use my mind to find out. As again, the negative things are easy.
You change the question. You change the narrative.
You said, yeah. Suddenly, do you love him? Oh, yeah, I love him. Does he love you? Oh, I think he does. And then you start saying, does he interrupt you when you're talking? Yes. I mean, so I want to know what's positive about the relationship. And to me, the positive requires thinking. It doesn't come easily because it's an effort. Now you have to use your brain. You have to use, okay. So that's my start. So you stress the positive. So one day I heard about transcendental meditation. How do I do that?
Say it again.
Transcendental meditation.
Okay.
From one person to another, I discovered this guy, this guru. I come and said, I have $1,500 and I'll teach you how to meditate.
You're like, done. I'm doing it.
Okay. So I took I paid him $1,500. I can teach you that in a few minutes. Exactly. So what it is, the mind is always busy. It's like the surface of an ocean. And the ocean, that's where you hear the noise, the waves, one wave after wave after wave. That's the noise. But if you go deep in your mind, your ocean, there is less and less and less and less. Until you get to a point.
So it's quiet.
It's silence. And it's not going to last long because your mind is not trained to be silent. You go back like a bubble. Yeah. Go back to the surface.
Social media. Everything going on.
Whatever
it is.
So then you ignore it. You don't say, I'm not going to think about it. Because if you say, I'm not going to think about the color blue, you're going to think about the color blue. All right? So you ignore it. You go back down. And as you experiment with this and you practice and you practice and you practice, you get to a point where you can be in complete peace in a storm.
That's deep.
And that's what you want. You want to have your mind under control, not let it chatter and stick with the past that you cannot change, or go to the future, what you're going to, it's not yet here. And so that's the strength of the relaxation and going into a silent, but you have to do it in a place where there are initially, at least initially, and pick up a word. We call it a mantra. A word is, you repeat that initially high volume until you lower the voice, and you saw me lowering my voice, until you say it in your heart. When you start saying it in your heart, you're there.
Wow. I've never experienced
that. To me,
that,
so I'm like, this was a therapy session for me. But that is so important for patients to ahead of time.
To have control.
Yes. But also after, because it's a roller coaster.
Of emotions during recovery. And that's why I think you meditation is so important to learn.
Absolutely.
And to, because otherwise, you're either spending time in the past and trying to rearrange the past. People do that.
And you can't.
And you can't. You just can't. The past is not the past. The past is a participatory in the present.
Yes.
I need to stop talking, otherwise I'll
be present. No, I want you to keep talking. I'm like, please, mommy, sorry, you're going to have to leave. We're going to have a therapy session.
So this is why I'm like, I have to have Dr. Fustak on the show, because
amazing.
These are the types of conversations that I would hear while I'm sitting there, taking notes during an appointment. And I would leave and go home and just think about these things like, oh my God, I have to learn that. I have to change my diet. I have all of these conversations he was having with his patients. It was like he was having them with me, because I'm behind him like, okay, tonight I got to go.
I got to do this. I'm making my notes by myself. Yes.
So meditation, was that how you were able to walk on the
coals?
On fire.
Is it
real fire?
Coals or fire?
No. This happened in San Diego.
Okay.
I flew to San Diego. And was organized by Anthony Robbins at the time.
Oh, yeah. He's known for doing that. Yeah.
And so I get into it. So it's a Holiday Inn with a big front court.
Okay.
And we got there at 9 o'clock in the evening, and there were three mountains of wood.
Oh my gosh, right? I couldn't imagine.
And we went inside the hall, and he was talking about what we're talking about here. And then we signed a release form that if we get burned.
I'm hot just even thinking about it.
And then they spread all of that into a 12 feet long bed.
Okay.
There were three of them.
Okay.
Three of them. So because there were a couple of hundred people.
Mm-hmm.
And we signed that release form. They're not responsible if we get burned. And you had to walk slowly, not looking down. You look down, you're going to get burned.
I would have just jetted across.
and not looking at the horizon. I was always in a spiritual space.
Okay.
And I walked slowly and got to the end. At the end of the bed, there was a guy holding a water hose.
Just in case,
some of those fragment is caught between your toes, because you don't know. So I didn't need the water. I passed it, looked back, and I saw all those embers. And I said, I walk on this?
Oh my God.
Did I walk on this?
So you blew your own mind.
I mean, now I looked at my feet. There was no redness. There was nothing.
No blisters.
I didn't feel no blister. I didn't feel anything. And that changed who I am. That was a huge.
Because you knew
the power of the mind.
Yeah.
That you could go and walk on fire without being burned. So you're not a physical being.
Isn't this amazing, you guys? I'm smiling so big because I'm so happy to be able to share these things with you.
Thank you, Mavi.
I'm so excited to be able to share these. This is something that I feel our listeners would really benefit from. Realizing and finding out and knowing all of these things that this is not in, you're not going to hear about this
you on the Kardashians,
on,
no.
on TV. This is not in mainstream media. Like these, you have to be on a mission for these things to find them, to look for them. You have to be looking for them. They're not going to pop out in front of you and tell you, hey, learn how to meditate. Nobody is going to be out there looking out doing that for you. So you have to be on a mission for it. And I'm putting it here in front of you. I want you guys to start thinking about your mind, your body connection, nutrition, looking beyond tummy tucks and, you know, fixing your body on the outside. Because like the title of this episode is Beauty Starts on the Inside.
Yes. And some patients, they might be able to nutrition and do workout without cosmetic surgery.
Yeah, of course. And they might, like, for example, if somebody's listening to us today and
they just don't know it.
Maybe somebody who's listening to us today could have a father that passed away from a heart attack and is listening to Dr. Fustock's story and is like, hey, man, this is what I got to do. This is what I have to do and make lifestyle changes to, you know, a better future.
Remember, you need to be like a childlike attitude. When a child starts to ask questions, why this is like, mom or dad will explain. Why? Will explain why they'll explain why they, after a while said because that's the way it is. Stop asking questions. And you really
just listen.
You need to listen. I need to be open-minded and try to be okay, honey. I don't know the answer to this question, but let me see in a couple of days. I'm going to research that and I'm going to give you the right answer.
Yeah.
That's an attitude. That's what we need to be done. I wish I knew this when I was a father, a very young father. You are on a journey and the journey has no destination.
Yeah.
Other than the destination, you don't want to be your journey to be controlled by the wind. You want to control the wind with your sail. So it takes you to your whatever destination you want to have. And it's a self-discovery. Everything you do is a self-discovery. If you hit a good note, be thankful. If you hit a bad note or bad experience, you're supposed to learn from it. This didn't happen by accident. I'm supposed to learn from. What am I supposed to learn from this
event?
It's not a failure.
Okay. But if you have, and you look at yourself in the mirror, and you see something that's holding you down, and we can help you with that. And it releases all that negative package that you put on your shoulders, then you're okay.
Yes.
If somebody comes to me, doc, I have this scar here, and I'm looking, and I can barely see the scar myself. And, you know, there is nothing I can do for you. The scar is in your mind. Just forget about it, because there is nothing can be done to make it look better or to erase it. You cannot erase that.
Right. And sometimes they want it to be erased. Yeah. And you're like,
give me the eraser.
You're going to make it worse.
Mavi, give me the eraser. It's gone. So we're on a journey and it's only about self-discovery and self-knowledge.
Yes.
Yeah.
Knowledge.
That's and today we learned point. That if you're not learning, you're losing.
Correct.
Mental agility. Yes. And that just blew my mind today. I learned that today. So if we're not actively learning new things or reading or...
Yeah, because things change every day.
So you work out, you develop new neurons. Okay. What are you going to do with them? If you don't nourish them, you're going to lose them. Okay.
So when you work out, you make new neurons and then the neurons... We're educating them with
dopamine. I
know. Yeah. You see, there is no neutrality in the body. You're either producing good neuropeptides or cortisol, adrenaline, noradrenaline, and other toxic material. I forgot to tell you that every one of us, every day, is exposed to 700,000 bad chemicals from our environment.
Whoa.
Every day.
Wow.
So you accumulate a lot of those chemicals over your lifetime. Mm-hmm. Unless you start looking into nutrition that will get rid of those toxins. Unless you do what we call intermittent fasting, which is now unaccepted. Without intermittent fasting, you're going to pollute your inner world.
And isn't it interesting that intermittent fasting a few years ago was a big no-no? Or like fasting in general was, oh no, you have to eat. You have to put something in your stomach as soon as you wake up. And
now?
No, that's not correct. At least for me, I'm not going to. Some people need something in the morning. That's okay. But it's what you eat. It's really what you eat. I want to say this. If every one of you, and I'm addressing your audience, get to know the composition of your body. And you learn, what's the number one in my body? Is water. Obviously, between 50, 55, 60% water. What's the next one? Fat. What's the next one? Protein, meaning muscles. Okay. Then if you get to the last question, in our diet, you have three major macromolecules, fat, protein, and carbs. You don't have a fourth one, only three. So what is the percentage of carbohydrate in the body? I'm asking you a question.
Like 2%?
I don't know.
It's super low.
1 to 1.5%.
There you go.
You're very close.
Okay.
Very close. So when you look at your plate, you're about to eat.
It
look
needs
at
to
the
be
percentage
colorful.
Of what does it reflect the composition of your body that you're
Whoa.
Trying to restore?
That just blew my mind. I had never thought about it like
yeah.
that.
Yeah. It's like you want your plate to be colorful.
As colorful as possible.
Meaning, so that means fruits
meaning
and vegetables.
The food you're about to ingest should have 60% water-rich food.
Yes.
At least.
60% water-rich food.
And what food has more than 60% of water-rich food? Vegetables.
Vegetables.
Colorful.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and vegetables, you have a variety. You need more variety in your salad. You don't want to see one item. You need to see colors.
Yes.
And that means you're getting a lot of phytochemicals. Phytochemicals are the chemical in the food, only in the vegetables. Mm-hmm. And animals that are fed naturally.
So, yes. You know what? That is huge.
It's another topic.
Yes.
That's a whole other
for
topic.
For sure. Because the animals that are fed grain, wheat, and then you're processing that.
And not just that.
That makes no sense.
Even just think about pork.
Genetically modified.
It doesn't make sense.
So unless you're homesteading it with the cow and chickens and goats, you don't know what you're really eating.
No, we know. We really know.
Well,
bad things.
Mm-hmm.
Bad thing. I'm not going to get into it. It makes me nauseous.
Because of what they're putting in our meats and in our foods and in processed foods. Yeah. So I'm putting together my like recommendations for getting ready for surgery. And in there, I'm like, you know, no processed foods. And I get pictures of like, is this processed? Is this processed? Is this processed? I'm like, if it has a label with 100 ingredients, 10 ingredients, 5, like anything over maybe 1 or 2 ingredients, it's processed food.
The first couple of ingredients, like 1, 2, 3, if you can't even
pronounce them.
Yeah. If you can't even say them. It's probably not good.
It's probably not good for you to eat.
Anything that's packaged, anything that's frozen, anything that genetically modified, you don't want to put them in your mouth.
Yeah. Think also inside the grocery store. In the middle of the grocery store, don't go. Because it's all canned, bagged.
Boxes.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. So you have
go
to stay
outside the perimeters.
Go to where the green is.
Exactly.
Stay in the produce section and do your grocery shopping in the produce section.
Yeah.
Pretty much. Like load up that cart with as much vegetables. And really, you have to get creative because I know for a lot of us, we're not eating for nutrition. We're eating for taste, for enjoyment, how it's
texture,
like how is it good? And I've actually been saying this to my kids recently. We don't eat it because it's good. We're eating for nutrition. We're eating because it's good for
us. It's fuel.
Yeah.
And once they start eating it over and over, they start liking it.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
When I have dinner with friends and they see what my kids eat, they're like, how do you get them to eat that? Because my son and my daughter will eat anything. I've been making them eat vegetables since they were in the high chair. That was their first.
They don't know the difference.
They don't. And like my son asks for broccoli. He asks for vegetables and my daughter does too. And I'm like, I make them eat it. I just tell them they don't have a choice. You have to eat it.
This is what you're having. Because if not, you're not eating.
Yeah. And I know a lot of moms who struggle because they're like, well, I can't eat healthy because I have to cook for my kids and my kids, you know, they don't like to eat that. And it's like, well, like I'm telling y'all what my mom used to tell me when I was at home. This is not a restaurant.
Right. I'm not a short this order is not, cook.
You don't have a chef. This is what we're having for dinner. And if you're not hungry, if you don't want to eat this, you can come eat it when you're hungry, mm-hmm. which is what my mom used to do to us. She's like, if you don't want to eat it right now, that's fine. It'll be here when you're ready to eat. So you're going to come back and eat it.
That's wonderful.
So I've gotten my kids to
eat all the veggies.
Yeah, they like it. So I'm trying to, I've tried Dr. Fustak. I've been thinking about all these things for my kids because I'm like, you know what? I'm making changes, but it's even more impactful for me to make changes for my kids because my kids will make changes in their families and then it'll go on. It'll become a lifestyle because my dad, my dad's vegetarian and my sister's vegan and like it's coming from our family for my kids. They already know Emily can't eat that because it's not vegan. You know, grandpa won't eat that because it's fish. So they already know kind of the limitations of what they can and can't have. And they know they can't have candy. I try to limit candy as much as I possibly can.
The only time is Halloween.
I try.
And then when they eat it, they're like, two pieces.
Yeah.
And they're out. They don't even eat.
I let them take a handful.
Yeah.
And then we'll save the rest for tomorrow. And then I'll throw it away.
They don't even eat it. Yeah.
I don't let them have it. So, okay. I know you're going to be offering consultations. So what are these consultations? What are we going to be doing? What are these consultations for nutrition? What would you call them?
It's a health consultation. I ask them to write down everything that goes into their system for 2 weeks.
Including vitamins, food, anything.
Everything that you drink, you eat, you take, for 2 weeks. And then when they come, by that time, we will order the inflammatory markers in the blood. That is key because if they don't have that, I go and say, okay, this is what you eat. Let me see what you ate for. And then I said, this is good, this is bad, this is good. And I explain why it's good. Now there is a new information about lectins. And I'm just going to say a few words about it because otherwise I'll get lost into the details. Lectins are protein produced by certain vegetables. The vegetables start producing those chemicals because insects were eating them.
Mm-hmm.
And they wanted to stop the insect from eating them. They produce those toxin chemical that either will paralyze the insect or will kill it. So it's a self-protective mechanism for their species. Now, if you eat those vegetables that has lots of lectin, there are five groups of lectins, but I'm not going to go into that. After a while, as a human, they start causing problem with the intestines. I'm not going to talk about the intestine because, again, this is a long subject.
You guys, this is how I would
say. This is so cool. I'm so intrigued right now.
These are the interesting conversations that I would soak up because I'm like, what? I had no idea. So I think it's really important for you to go tell us about it.
Okay.
Lectins, see, you have to understand what's your digestive system. It starts with the mouth and nose, and it goes end up at the anus. So where you eliminate what you didn't absorb or you didn't. The food gets into the stomach where the protein gets digested, and then it needs acid for that. Then it goes into the intestine where it digests the vegetables, and for that you need alkaline, and then start absorbing it. Now, I want you to understand, and this is critical, the separation, because from your mouth all the way to the other end, it's a tunnel in your body, meaning it's not part of you. It's part of the outside world. So this part of the outside world, it's a tunnel. So like a tunnel, a tunnel under the North Sea connect England to France. And it's Earth, but under the water. So your tunnel is from the mouth, as I said, to the other end. And that's a tunnel. Your inner body is your blood. Okay? So the tunnel at one point in time connect your intestinal wall, connect your the tunnel to the blood. The thickness, and this is important for you to understand, the thickness of that wall is one cell thick.
Wow.
Which is super tiny.
Super tiny. You can see through it. You can see through it.
Yeah,
you
it's like...
So the integrity.
You couldn't even hold it in
So the integrity of the intestinal wall is everything. Now, lectins destroy. They connect with carbohydrate and they linger around the internal wall of your intestines. And through that process, if you keep repeating it, then the intestinal wall are what we call the enterocytes. These are the cells of the intestines that are connected together. So you have the sugar comes and the enterocyte or the intestinal wall cells will grab the sugar and get it into the blood, okay? And then it goes there, requiring some insulin, goes and be distributed as a source of energy to all the cells in your body. But if there is a wall, a hole in the wall, what can go through that? All the toxins, including the lectins. And one of the lectins called wheat germs agglutinin. I mean, this is it's a word. I mean, don't hang on it. It's just a chemical that goes into the body and it mimics the activity of the insulin. Okay? Other than, you know, the insulin takes the glucose or the amino acid or the fatty acid and they go and deliver it to each cell. They knock at the door of the cell, said the muscle, for example, do you need food? Yeah. Here you go, deliver. And to do that, it has to lock in or to dock in on the wall of your muscle cell. And they open a door, the glucose gets into the cells, and it goes in mitochondria and be burned to produce energy for the cell to be activated.
Just like a plant.
So, like, just like your car, you put the gasoline in it, and that's the energy. And then you turn on
that's
your
it.
Car.
Like
and
the
you,
mitochondria.
So a muscle cell has to allow you to walk, allow you to run, allow you to. So it needs energy. Now, that other wheat germs, agglutinin, comes into, it mimics the action of the insulin. So it goes inside your body because you have a hole in your guts and goes and to the wall of the fat cell and duck in. The insulin, after it delivers the glucose, it ducks out and leave. Okay? This one ducks in and keep the door open on the fat cells. Now it goes and ducks in where? On the muscle cell, right? And open the door for it and occupy that. It's imagine in an airport and you come on your airplane and you duck in the door, the gate. Now imagine your other flight coming in and the gate is not available.
Where do I go?
Now, the only gate that will be available is the fat cells.
Yeah.
So the fat cells, the door is open.
We'll take it. In.
Now, the muscle cell, the brain cells, for example, they get this agglutinin, docks into the muscle cell and the brain cells and doesn't allow delivery of the energy.
It blocks it.
It blocks because that airplane cannot get in.
Right.
It cannot connect for people to deplane.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the fat cell is having a blast getting all that food in. Okay? The brain cell says, I'm not getting any food. Where's the food? It goes to the pancreas and said, produce more insulin.
Oh, geez. No. And that's what you don't
and
want.
And so then the pancreas produces more insulin.
But the brain doesn't get it.
Doesn't get it. Because if all of the docs are connected to that lectins, nothing is going to go in.
Yeah.
And then you start having problem with insulin resistance and so on. So that's why the lectins is so important. And some vegetables have no lectins. Some have a variable number of lectins. The smallest amount of lectin, the better it is for you. And I'm just going to stop at that.
And of all the athletes that are totally off meat.
Off meat.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, there's a lot of athletes that are
and
off,
they're
completely
huge.
Off.
They're huge.
What are the vegetables that have the most?
Okay. Eggplants.
Okay.
Tomatoes.
Oh, I love tomatoes.
Cucumber.
My favorite.
See?
The variety goes. Watermelon.
See?
You know, a lot of them. I have a list that you can ask Jenny to give you a list.
Yes. You guys, we're going to include the list.
Yeah, I was going to say, can you include the list, please?
We'll include the list because I think that's really important for our patients, our girls, to
our listeners.
Learn.
If you like green beans, okay, rice.
I could literally eat green beans just.
Okay, green beans have a lot of lectins. But if you cook them in a pressure cooker,
chips.
The lectins are destroyed.
See, oh, okay. Well, that's good to know.
No, I just eat them out of the bag.
Well, it's good to know, though, that if you cook them, though, it destroys them. So that's good.
Okay.
At least that helps. But on cucumber, you can't cook
if
cucumber.
If you peel them and you remove the seeds, you can eat.
See?
Done. Because cucumber is my favorite vegetable. I love cucumbers.
But
okay. So now we know a whole bunch about what the importance of what we put into our body, the importance of having control over our thoughts and our
emotions,
kind of
meditation.
This consultation, I think for all of our listeners is invaluable because learning where you are on the spectrum of deficiencies, I think is crucial before you go into surgery because malnutrition can cause wound breakdowns.
Obesity is malnutrition.
So no one ever says that. Thank you for saying that.
Obesity is a malnutrition. And it's not a willpower. No, it's a habit. We're animals of habits. We form habits. We become really, if you ask, you know, I used to ask my children, what restaurant you want to go to? They want to go to the same restaurant over and over and over when we go on our Friday evening because they're familiar. Familiarity with things is good. It's good to know that your surrounding and you be familiarized with it. But it's not good to be, not to avoid searching for better options.
Right.
How do you know? You don't have
and it's
options.
Houston. We have tons of options. No. Are you kidding me?
So we're animal of habits. And if you was, I mean, I ask people, write down everything you do from the moment you get up to the moment you go to sleep. And after a week, you're going to discover you're repeating everything. And
wow.
It's like
when you repeat things, our brain put it in the automatic part of our brain. So to keep you open to new things. But if you keep repeating, the brain goes to sleep. So it doesn't need me.
Because you should be always growing.
Why should I be? They go to waste.
And that's why we need to be always learning, always
growing,
expanding our knowledge, trying to soak in as many of these types of conversations as possible.
Yes, exactly.
And read as many books as possible. I do also want to tell you guys that Dr. Fustock is going to be launching his very own podcast here soon. We are very excited. There is so much that he can talk about for hours. That he has to have his own show.
He needs it. There's no way we can have this.
Yeah, there's no way. Like, I would need you on for 10 episodes to even scratch the surface.
DM him what you want to hear.
Oh, yeah, for sure. So if you guys have things that you're like, hey, Dr. Fustock, I would really love to hear you talk more about this specifically, send his Instagram, which is, I'll link it in the description. Send him a message because he'll get those messages. And if you want to hear him talk about, for example, the Mediterranean diet, he can talk about it. There you go. He can talk about it.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to be your first DM.
Tell us a little bit about what you are going to be talking about on your show.
My first
episode,
I'm going to be talking about going from a couch potato, smoking pipes, to doing Ironman.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
That's the other part that I want to talk to you guys about.
I was talking about Bobby. I was like, oh my gosh, he did Ironman?
Yeah. And you've done it more than once.
Yes. Right?
I've done 22.
Oh my gosh.
Come on, you guys. Superman. Like, this is amazing. And this is because of nutrition and because of exercise. And
he practices what he preaches.
Exactly. Because this is actually like in person practicing what you preach. And mm-hmm. I mean, doing 22 Ironmans. What is, for our listeners who don't know what an Ironman is, what is it?
An Ironman is triathlon. It's about 2.4 miles swimming in open water. And then 112 miles biking, and then a marathon, 26.2 miles.
Come on, you guys. That's insane. I can't even get through the 2 mile swimming part.
I was just tired listening to it. Just kidding.
He's amazing. And I am really excited about your podcast. Told me about it, I was like, oh my God, I cannot wait to listen, because it's just going to be
we're so supportive. Yeah. Like, this is amazing.
So that's my first episode. The second one probably is going to be about nutrition.
That's good.
Because that's how I learned about myself. Going from one day, I was running 6 miles a day, at least 6 days a week. And then one day I was running in Memorial Park and somebody said, you want to train for a marathon? Stop. What a marathon. Oh, it's a 26.2 miles. I said, okay, I want to do that. So, well, come and join us. We're going to train you. And before long, I did my first marathon.
That's so awesome.
With me when I did my first marathon.
I think it's amazing. And how did you end up doing Ironman?
Our routine is we graduated for marathons. Because that's only 26.2 miles.
Only. I know, that's what I was going to say.
So we started doing ultra marathon, meaning these are on trails. And started doing 50 miles, 70K,
my God.
100 miles. I did 200 miles and I stopped. I wouldn't do that again because you go through the night. We started at 6 o'clock in the morning. And finished at 10:30 the next day.
Oh my, but that's still really fast.
No.
200 miles?
Again, from 6 a.m. Saturday to 10:30 a.m. Sunday.
Oh my gosh. That is a long time to be running.
That is, and it's on in the mountains.
You're uphill.
Elevated.
Up and down. Up and down.
Oh, elevation.
Yeah.
With
distance, night, you start deprived of sleep. You start
oxygen.
Hallucinating and you start seeing things and you want to stop.
You're not motivating me to do this. Okay.
You're crazy. What are you doing? But once you cross that finish line,
it's like
you forget about everything. I did it. Said, wow. So I did it.
Wow.
And, so cool.
So you do have hesitation. You do have doubts.
Mm-hmm.
And for example, I want to stop. I want to, it's over. Okay. I talk to myself, wait until the next aid station, which is 12 miles later.
Mm-hmm.
And if you feel that by then that you want to give up, that's fine. You sit and they'll take you back to the hotel.
Mm-hmm.
I get to that and said, maybe the next one.
Yeah.
Maybe the next one, I play a game with myself until I get to the finish line.
Good job.
And that's a good analogy for your recovery.
For your recovery. Because you want to give up. You're like, oh my God, what did I do to myself?
Why did I do this?
Yeah. It's crazy.
Right?
It's crazy. I can't believe
But I got to keep pushing through.
So you keep pushing through the envelope.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't know how high is high.
Ooh, that was deep. You don't know how high is high.
Yeah.
That's true.
That gave me chills.
I know. I was like, when I jumped out of an airplane the first time, I was like, oh, this is scary. But the third and fourth time, it was like,
I'm ready.
I'm free. Yeah, exactly. I'm good. You get used to it.
So it's pushing yourself.
Pushing yourself.
You have to push yourself. Because, and I think we get comfortable.
Yeah. You get comfortable with less and less and less until all the doors are closed and you're ready to die.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But so now I think you guys understand a little bit of why I'm like
so excited
to have Dr. Fustak on and for his podcast and to have you guys come see him for consultations and get a little piece of these types of conversations, because you don't get them at other plastic surgery offices. You don't get them even with your therapist. Sometimes you don't get them anywhere.
So when do you do consultations?
When do I do consultations? We see people on Tuesdays and Fridays.
Tuesdays. Okay.
And then the rest, we do surgery.
You guys, I'm going to include in the description his contact information so you guys can reach out for consultation on nutrition, reach out for consultation for surgery, for plastic surgery. But even if you're having your surgery with somebody else, you can still have this consultation for your nutrition. And because y'all know there are unethical surgeons who are not, they don't care if you're healthy enough to have surgery. They don't. Their focus is on other things. So you can do your own homework. I actually got a message yesterday from a patient who went to the best plastic surgeon in the city that she was in, which I think she was in Dallas. And she said, I went to the best place and I still had wound issues. In the message, it turned out that it was because of nutrition. And in my head, I'm thinking if I could help prevent these types of scenarios just by having a consultation with and deep analysis of deficiencies and what.
And especially what the people that have undergone bariatric surgery and they've changed their intestinal system, digestive system. These are the people that probably are deficient in a lot of necessary foods and nutrients and minerals and vitamins that will help them recover faster, because they're poor risk people.
Eat what they typically should eat.
Because you're going to have a problem unless you change, you get a consultation about what you're deficient in and what can be done to improve your healing processes.
Yeah. I'm so happy we 100%. Got to do this today. I think this is amazing for all of my listeners. I think this is amazing for Dr. Fustak's podcast that's going to be coming out soon. And I am so excited that y'all got to hear just a little bit of his knowledge.
Yes. Yeah.
I think it's now y'all know why I'm obsessed.
Well, thank you. Thank you to both of you because you stimulated me. You know, you asked the right questions and we could sit here and talk for hours. And you directed me, so otherwise I would be going on a tangent and talk about something else.
Those were my favorite parts, when you would go off and talk about something completely different, because then I'm learning something. Yeah. Like, for example, you would start talking about a tummy tuck and how a tummy tuck is done. And before I know it, I learned from you where liposuction started. How did it even start? What body parts they started on? And so many like really interesting things. And we talk about nutrition and all of these things that I'm like, wow, there's just so much to learn.
Yes.
And I'm so happy to have a teacher right here.
Yes. Thank you.
So you guys, at the bottom of this episode, in the description, you will find his contact information. Schedule your consultation. Let them know when you call that you heard him on the Big Butts No Lies podcast, and they will give you the Mavi treatment.
There you go.
Thank you so much, Dr. Fustak, for coming on today.
Thank you, Dr. Fustak.
I enjoyed it.
I appreciate it.
Okay, so the main thing I think we have learned from this episode, and I am so happy that we are able to learn these types of things, is I believe you should not be going into a big plastic surgery procedure with long incisions like tummy tucks and brachioplasties and thigh lifts. Or even if you've had bariatric surgery, like Dr. Fustak was saying earlier, you don't know where you are on the spectrum of deficiencies. And I think if we're trying to do everything right in order to prevent wound breakdowns, in order to prevent a bad recovery, I think it's crucial for us to get this consultation, nutrition consultation, and get our blood work done and figure out what we're lacking, where we need to really focus our energy and how to prepare our bodies to physically go through a big surgery. These are big surgeries that we're, it's not, you know, oh, it's nothing. No, these are big surgeries that we're doing, tummy tucks and full body liposuction all the way. Come on, you guys, we need to make sure that we're healthy enough. So contact information for Dr. Abdel Fustak. His office phone number is 713-621-2950. When you call, ask to speak to Iman and she will take care of you. I'm sure y'all heard her on the episode about breast reductions being covered by health insurance. So if you want a breast reduction covered by health insurance, or if you are looking for this consultation, which I think we all need to be, even if you're not having surgery, I'm doing it. I'm getting a consultation. So 713-621-2950. And I'll see you guys next week.
I would like to end this episode with a huge thank you to all of our listeners. If you enjoyed this podcast, make sure to subscribe to Big Butts No Lies Podcast and follow us on Instagram at Big Butts No Lies Podcast. If you have a topic you want me to cover, please send it to the DM. If you know anyone on their plastic surgery journey, be sure to recommend them the show. You can also visit us on our website, bigbuttsnolies.com. You'll see the online surgical recovery store. We're adding new items all the time. If there's something you think I need to have on there, send me a DM. Don't forget to leave us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts. And don't forget, new episodes every Monday. I'll see you then.